Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Band of History. This week we are talking to Chest Fever, the official revival of the band. To back it up a little bit, a few months ago on the show we had Mrs. Henry on, a great act from California. At the time, on top of their original music, they were doing various shows of band music, whether it be The Last Waltz and their elaborate production, documentary, and release of their version of The Last Waltz, amongst other things, and touring the music of the band across the U.S. Well, in a few months, and after some changes, they have a new separate project called Chest Fever with the official stamp of approval. I got to talk to the guys as they're gearing up to tour across the U.S. and Canada, taking their show on the road with horns for the 50th anniversary of Rock of Ages. Talking to the guys is great. It's definitely a little bit different than our normal episodes of the show. It's more laid back. It's more conversational. So I hope you guys all enjoy it. And this is my interview with Chest Fever. Since the last time we talked, some has changed. Not a lot, but some has changed. When you guys were on last in a band, you're doing your own stuff. You're doing Last Waltz stuff. You're doing band stuff. But we're now same group, more or less, but under a new name, Chest Fever, the official revival of the band. Talk to me a little bit about why you did that. I think I can understand, and a lot of people listening might understand why you'd want the separation and everything. But talk to me a little bit about that. And specifically, I think some people have been asking, some people have been curious around the official part, quote unquote, the official part. So maybe walk us through kind of how we got here, how we became Chest Fever, how we became the official revival of the band.
Well, it was a dark, stormy night. The band was on the reef. And then,
some cats that are now heavily involved with the band's legacy and their marketing, trademark logos and everything. They saw what we were doing and wanted us to be the live component and be the representation of what the music sounded like live. They came out to a show and they saw us, and they've been watching us for a little bit. And so theirs is the official band on Instagram. So as much as the band is sort of a vague and kind of a weird title for a band anyway, official can also be as obscure. So yeah, the official anything. I get the official LedZeppelin.com. I am definitely the official LedZeppelin.com. But the official revival of the band, I think that was their phrasing that they came up with to help.
That was actually my phrasing, Blake, that I came up with.
I was trying to remove us from liability. Now you're in the shark tank. You keep going.
Well, in short, it was a way to word what we felt was what our understanding of an interpretation that they saw of us. So I guess you could rewind the clock, go back to our first tour out of the gate after, you know, 2020, when we had the world shut down, our first actual run out of town shows since 2020. We go up to Well, we never made it to San Francisco since the last time we talked to you.
It never happened.
It never happened. Once again, it will be happening. Coming over high water.
We almost made it there.
We made it close. We went to Sunnyvale, and the beautiful people of Sunnyvale opened their doors, opened their port, and welcomed us. And we'll be back in Sunnyvale. But on this tour, we played. Our final stop was the Moroccan Lounge in L.A. And as Blake had said, you know, representatives of the crew that are now working, you know, on the legacy of the band, on maintaining and continuing that story. One of the members knew of us, had been knowing of us through a mutual friend of Jody.
Yeah, a friend of mine. And so they came and they had been watching what we were doing since the last waltz in our documentary. And so they came to check us out at the show that we played in Los Angeles.
Cool.
Yeah, they really, they dug it. They went up to Alan. At the time, Alan Ritter here was our, was TMing. And, you know, they let him know, hey, we really dig this and we've been digging this. And tell these boys to give us a call. And then, you know, we just, you know, officially, to use that term again, we're officially now on the radar, formed a relationship, have been in contact. And, you know, they are really great people and awesome. And, you know, a lot of mutual circles. The band is a tight knit family around the world of people in and out who kind of know one another. And they're so incredibly supportive of the band, of the story, of us, of what we're doing. And and thus, you know, there was a decision, a fork in the road. We were kind of meeting where, you know, anything with marketing, we've been finding, and promotions of what you're doing of a group needs to be as direct as possible. People need the easiest way to understand it and the most clear-cut way, so that, you know, it's less confusing, more friendly, more just, oh, I get it. Yeah.
Digestible. Like, even if somebody didn't know the band, what the band was, is, it's still, you're saying the word, oh, the band, which band? Then you got to go through that whole rigmarole. So even explaining, like, well, Mrs. Henry, but we playing nothing but the band music. Oh, the band is the band from Last Waltz, the band. And so it's just to kind of bring that conversation to a close and, like, have less, kind of say more.
Yeah. And I guess you don't want it to dilute brand of Miss Henry, like, as an act and an entity that puts out original music and is its own thing, right? You don't want that to kind of bleed too heavily into that, so people just think you're a group that covers material by the band, right?
Yes, that was the kind of predicament we were in, where it was hard, as much as we feel it was easy to understand. We were having, you know, we were just having trouble of, like, what is this original band? You guys have a rock opera. Is it about the band? No, you guys, you play the band, but what? But you're Mrs. Henry, and even Mrs. Henry, you know, kind of taking a little word of advice, being like, Mrs. Henry is still, it's not as on the nose to a reference. It's Bob Dylan and the band. We were like, wow, like, really? Is that really that far off? But you don't know how many people we've met who know the band, but maybe don't even know about that path, the band, as it's such a,
yeah,
big, you know, that band's such a universe in itself. And and so, you know, we just decided, hey, you know, well, we ain't getting any younger, why don't we try let's try something new, let's, why not give it a shot. And I've been seeing it, we're all, you know, aware of the social media, but man, I've been floored since doing that at just the response, and what I'm really happy and thankful for from our suggestions of our friends who are like, you know, listen, we think this is amazing. Like, dude, just we're trying to give you a good idea here. Just, you know, make it easy. And I went through every potential name you could go through. But the first, one of the first two names, I think, was Chest Fever. And we're just like, God, that's like one of our favorite songs. And, you know, like, my wife would always be like, that's the sexiest band song. She's like, that's it. That Chest Fever. That's, and I thought, well, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's not like you have unlimited names, because there's other bands out there that have taken their names from the band, like King Harvest, from the song King Harvest and stuff. So it's, Even I think Nazareth, not that it's a direct song reference, but I think that's from The Weight as well. Right. And then you have Jim Weider, who played with the band. He's got The Weight Band. So it's like there's not unlimited choices, but I think Chest Fever's the perfect name. I think you guys almost hit it right on the head.
There's a few. I don't remember. You remember any others? Danko was one.
Danko. Chester Fevers was list. I mean, we were in Mexico actually, and I'm
Jack's
sure,
Puppies. That wasn't long.
I figured these dudes are gonna kill me because I was literally in the band. We're on our way to this festival. I'm just like scribbling on paper, like, but guys, what about this one?
This one. Remember any other?
Just kept being no Chest Fever. It's all right, but Chest Fever, come on.
And you gotta check, make sure no one else is doing it too.
Yeah, because there was one.
The band would already been taken, so we figured, I can't do that. Can't do that one. He said, what about three of those? I'm like, that's too much.
Moondog Matinee, we were like, that's kind of cool. Moondog. But there's a band, Moondog Matinee.
Yeah.
El Bando.
Band.
The funniest one I saw is somebody's like, yeah, they should do a cover band of the band, and they should call it The Cover Band. And that's, I was like, I see what you're doing there. You know what I mean? But yeah, you guys hit it, I think. If you had to pick another one though, out of the ones that you were kind of coming up with, even if somebody had already taken it, what was truly the first choice, or was Chest Fever, you think, really ultimately?
Seems like we were between one.
Yeah, we liked King Harvest.
King Harvest.
That came to mind really quick before we knew that was currently taken.
What was the band from the 70s that
was it?
They didn't do anything anymore. It was like
maybe is King Harvest still a band? Like, but there's a Wikipedia page about them.
Yeah, they're big enough that it's kind of tough, eh? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great name.
It's a great name. Then we were like King something. Like, what about King Beaver? King
Levon?
Funny enough, a contender was the Heavy Levons.
Oh, the Heavy Levons.
And the Heavy Levons comes from our friend that we met in LA, and his name's Fabian. And Fabian has ties to Levon. He used to work, he used to be in Woodstock. He was working on a record. And we met him working on our album with Mrs. Henry at Palomino Sound at the recording studio in LA. And he was working at an automotive shop right across the parking lot. And he would come by and say, Hey, you boys. He's like, oh, you boys like the band. And he's like this. He's like, okay. He listened to our record. And then he's like, oh, you guys are like the Heavy Metal Levons. And we're like, and then every time he saw us, he'd call us the Heavy Levons. And you know, Blake, I know you know more. He was curating this amazing CD and this work that was all going to New Orleans relief. And
he's a total trip. That Congo Square is it's basically a visualist documentary. I listened to the album, and it's interviews with local native chiefs that are old as water, talking about the origin and the mixing of Creole and African slaves and Native Americans and how that shaped jazz. And it's this fascinating, super cool. And he's got everybody's playing on it. He's got Levon Helms playing on it. Like, let me give an example. Like, everybody plays on this thing. He's super connected. He's really, really
Jack DeJohnette.
Jack DeJohnette. So he's talking about Chucky Weiss. He's dropping some crazy stories about walking. Talk with him for a great length about a time he was strolling down the road with Lemmy in the UK before he was known as, I forget his name back then, but it was something like Leonard or something. It was just like very, and how nice he was. And he's like, always looking for the action. Anyway, this guy's just seen everything, done everything, but he did this project all about New Orleans. And he's
cool.
Super, super cool cat. I'll send you some stuff on him.
Yeah, that's actually a solid name. But I guess you guys have to choose, strike, in all fairness, you have to strike a little bit of a balance too. You can't really show favoritism to one member over the other, right? So
yes. There was another random one I remember that a friend said, which was the Robbie Robertsons, and it was in the same category as the Heavy Leo was. Well, yeah. We're like, well, why not be just Danko? It's the coolest.
You know,
then
they start having
the internet
fun,
would blow up.
No, nothing gets helpful after that, because you're like, well, Garth's kittens, Richard's teeth, and then it just doesn't make any sense, and no one wants to listen anymore.
Yeah, it's tough, because like the band fandom obviously is great, but you see people are very tribal over certain members and everything. So that, you know, I think you steered the right path. But now to get a little bit into that, is this Iconoclast? Are these the guys you're talking to? Are they the ones? Can you say if they're the ones or not?
We can neither say nor deny, as we don't know really where that stands of us saying or denying anything at this point.
Yeah, rock and roll is a fickle world.
Yeah, you know, we do know of them, and you know, but you know,
people can connect the dots.
People, yes, people are very good at connecting dots.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And that makes sense. So, like, let's talk. You know, I'm really interested. I have some questions here, but I don't want to go much further without talking about you, Alan. Last time you weren't interviewed. You weren't part of this whole thing. So talk to me a little bit about your involvement and you know, how you are going to fit in with the rest of the guys here, and what are you looking forward to on this project?
Well, I've known these guys for the better part of a decade already. I've played drums in Mrs. Henry. I've played percussion in Mrs. Henry. I've tour managed Mrs. Henry. Now I'm going to drum again for Mrs. Henry and tour manage as well. So yeah, I mean, like I've known all these guys. I've played in other projects with them. 15 years.
God damn. 16 years.
15 years. Okay. So yeah, like a long time. I mean, all sorts of projects together. So I mean, we already had like a natural feel and play kind of well together. Not to take anything away from Chad or anything, you know, because he's a fantastic drummer as well. So I'm mm-hmm. just really trying to fill his shoes. So
well, in Chess Fever, you got the Levon shoes too.
Well, yeah. So I'm filling Chad's and Levon shoes.
Chad at this socks. And Levon
yeah.
Shoes. Yes.
There's
yes.
a diagram.
Chad's sweaty socks and yes. yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to you know, just you know, being on the road with the guys, because you know, these are my friends.
Cool. No, that's awesome. You're like the Ian Stewart Rolling Stone equivalent to these guys. That's playing right. with them. Road managing, all the kind of stuff. So
all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, that's awesome.
Real quick, I want to introduce to Andrew.
Yes, yes, please. We have to introduce Andrew because he is also, you know, as Mrs. Henry is a four-piece band, Chess Fever is a five-piece group. And here is Andrew Hughes of Hughes Farms. Let me give a little. Blake, you've known Andrew since the line.
I've known Andrew for forever. Yeah, he's a screaming violinist. He's been playing since forever, and he's an organ player. And so he'll be doing a lot of the Garth world. Take it away, Andrew. Cool. Hi, cool. Welcome to the fun.
Well, hello. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I knew Blake in third grade, and we became friends very quickly. And then through Blake, I met Mrs. Henry in 2013.
Way back.
Well, yeah.
20 years.
We're on our way. It's crazy. We met events, concerts, practices. And...
Oh, he filmed The Last Waltz for us the first time and played at the same time.
Wow. Yeah, I filmed The Last Waltz.
And then the documentary too. He's the co-director.
I worked with Dan to make the documentary, The Last Waltz documentary. So it's just been kind of like you know, just I've known this band for a long time, and then Dan asked me to kind of to be the part of Garth Hudson, and I play organ at my church. But I will say my church organ and the, you know, this style of organ that we're doing with the Leslie speakers is very different, but I love mm-hmm. it. I love the Leslie speaker. I love going between the non-spinny mode and the spinny mode, you know, kind of like switching between those two things.
I've never heard it articulated like that. And that's exactly what it is. There's nothing wrong with that. He's on the funkiest Lowry on the planet. I wish he could show you.
It's always spinning. It's just either slow or fast.
Yes. Less spinning or more spinning. Less spinning, technically.
That is.
But now he's got this wacky organ that he's playing on, a Lowry that's got like a pitch bend and
nice. So the full Garth, the full Lowry. Dude, we're not settling for the Hammond. We're going for the full Lowry. We're keeping full it fun. Authentic.
We have a couple of B3s, but this Lowry is like.
Yeah, we've got. So right now we've been practicing. We got the training wheels is actually really good. It's a Story and Clark, and I bought this Story and Clark at a thrift shop. We'll go with 20 years ago. And that's the magic number.
So sick of time.
And it's a Story and Clark, and we had it for the longest time. It was weird. Oregon has a Wawa on it and this weird Vex, and didn't really think too much of it. We're literally gonna throw it away. And I was like, you know, I remember asking Jody, like, Jody, what do you think? I don't know, man. We're just trying to like clear more records for more space and more things, you know, like we want to move things from one side of the room to the other again. So what do you think, Jody? Should we throw it away? And Jody played it, and there's a video of you playing it in the alleyway right by the dumpster. And we were
is
like,
"That one? Was it white earlier?"
No, that we did
That's
throw
a different
that one,
one
away.
We threw away that again.
Throw that one away.
That one was also very weird.
Yeah, that one had like a synthesizer on it. But so we didn't. Jody played it, convinced it, stayed around, lent it to our friend Boy Beres, Matt Beres, and then I just realized all of a sudden, you know, in the middle of the night, I woke up and I was like, "Oh my god, that's the organ! What am I been doing with my life?" And then I got it from him. We brought it to a friend to get serviced. He chopped it in half, and now we have it. Nice. And the chopping in half was neither good nor bad. It just is, you know,
added to its funk.
Old stumpy.
We might shoot it before or stab it a couple times. Light it on fire. We'll singe it because it's just it's all kinds of calamity.
Yeah, so cool. we have the Story of Clark, and we found out through just the natural way of the world of deep diving and searching that Story and Clark is actually a brand that was of Lowry, or Lowry sold the rights to Story and Clark. And thus we actually have a Lowry. And I mean, it sounds as close to the Lowry as you can possibly get with the glide pitch bend. It's got the auto beat, so you can do like that effect on, you know, this wheel's on fire. Like verbatim, and says echoes and wahs and all these settings and
super funky. You'd almost not want to use the reverbs, but it really fits with the Garth Odyssey thing. And Andrew's been rocking it really, really well, and which has been freeing up Jody to be full piano land, which has been a whole cool thing doing the Richard Manuel bit.
Cool. Now for you two new guys, what's, you know, we talked last time about it with the rest of the guys here about the band and how they kind of came across them and everything. For you guys now getting into this, even if you were a casual listener before, you guys are full-fledged in it. Like the accuracy in which you guys are playing a lot of these tunes and everything is really next to none. So what was it like exploring these songs? What did you know about coming into it, and what were some of the, you know, the challenges in trying to replicate it, but also kind of make it your own too, obviously, because you guys are full-fledged players in your own right? So it's kind of, I'm assuming, kind of striking the balance between both.
I think you said it right, the Odyssey and the Oddity. Yeah, is that what you said? That's so. What yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think Garth Hudson is, you know, he's like watching the videos of them on stage. He's kind of in the back, the back of the organ is facing the audience. You don't really see too much what's going on back there. You see his head pop out a little bit, you know, but it's a mystery, you know, and really the only key that we have is what we hear, really. And I started listening to, well, I never really known the band until before 2014 when Dan kind of introduced me to the band. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, this sounds really cool. Like, I can't believe I haven't heard of this music before. Like, and then like we started working on the Last Waltz stuff, and I was listening to the Last Waltz, and I played violin in that show. So I was playing Acadian Driftwood. I was playing Night That Drove Old Dixie Down, Night in New Orleans. Rag Bummer Rag, which I'm playing violin in for. That's the one song that I'll play violin for on this tour, so I'm excited. But it's been a mystery, and I know the Lowry is a very complex instrument. There's a lot of sounds going on, but even beyond that, the way he plays, the way he the way he, the, it's like the mixture of his playing with the oddities of the Lowry. It's a very strange mystery, and there will never be, you know, I can't play exactly like him. I can listen to, I've listened to his recordings, his playing, and I can play the notes, but it's just not him. It's me. And so I'm trying to get into his head exactly how he did it. But
having known this dude since the third grade too, though, and being a little more familiar with Garth Hudson and some of the peculiarities, it's kind of fun to see how some of the instincts that I see Andrew shooting for are kind of like spot on Garth, with having not even really known Garth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. so many different ways. So
I don't know if that was an accident, maybe that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There's a good design somewhere. There's a grand design somewhere in there. I mean, even just I know Garth, obviously the legend of Garth, of him playing in Funeral, you know, a funeral home, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. And then,
yeah,
you know, but Andrew's been playing hymns and, you know, has been playing them for years, almost like, you know,
yeah, I started when I was 16. I started organ at my church. So, but you know, cool. the organ at my church is way different. Like and this organ here is like, I kind of want to take this organ into my church and like really get that gospel sound.
We're trying to get Andrew's church to buy us two Leslies to take on the road and then house them at the church, and then also another a Lowry, because we do have we have the story in Clark, but Jody and I drove out to Fresno and purchased a Lowry Symphonic Theater H25-E3.
It's the largest thing on the planet.
Yeah, and this organ, an actual Lowry, along with the story, we've just now have a museum of these, and it's being serviced by a gentleman by the name of Tim Rogers, and it's an unbelievable uphill battle to get these things back to life, because not that many people repair Hammond organs, fewer repair Lowry organs, and there's like one dude. And he's the dude, and he's the man. His name's Tim Rogers, and we're eternally grateful for his help and his service, because he literally answered the call, and he doesn't answer his phone because it's constantly ringing off the hook, and he answered the call for help because I left a voice message explaining everything. And he was like, you boys need help.
Cool.
I'm here to do something, so I'll help you.
Yeah, these what are like a piece of machinery, right? Like, that's half the stories with Garth and Richard. Like, Garth and Richard would tear these things apart and build them back again, and like they would tinker with them at all hours of the nights, because they're instruments, but they're also pieces of machinery. It's like engineering,
machine, man.
Yeah.
It's like if you're playing R2-D2, you gotta tear his arms off again. I'm sorry, bud, put it back together. We've done that with all of our gear. We've been inside the B3, taken apart the clav, mainly out of necessity, you know.
Yeah,
it fails, you gotta figure it out and jump in.
The story of Clark is open right now.
Yeah,
the guts are open for us to view right now, and it's amazing how many wires are just sticking out of everything.
Yeah, and literally we found out the Lowry had mouse nests. The rat's nests, there were dead mice and mice, but the nine of the mice had chewed through any of the cables. And you know, we're also thankful too to give another shout out to two dudes in the Hammond world, and I know Jody's worked a lot with one of them in particular, well, both of them, Paul Spees and Harold. So Jody, maybe you want to give them some love.
Yeah, you know, like Dan said, there's few people that work on this gear, and you know, every time you talk to someone, they're like, oh, you know, the last guy we talked to, there's a guy in San Francisco who worked on him, but yeah, he just died, and you know, no one's really taking an interest in interning or anything for these. But yeah, luckily we do have a tech down in San Diego named Paul Spees, who's worked on a lot of my keyboards. He's currently trying to help us with a bit of a hum that we have on that Story in Clark organ. And then another fellow, Harold Branch, has been working on a lot of our gear as well. So, you know, it takes a village. We've got a whole team helping us. And then, you know, the more they help and fix things, the more we learn about it, and the more we're able to fix that gear as well.
Cool. Alan, I'll throw it over to you. You know, Levon, you know, I think it's really not much of a contest. I think Levon Helm is probably the most popular member of the band. He has a huge impact on the drumming world and everything, and obviously his voice. But specifically with drumming, he's got a unique style, definitely part of that era. You know, the likes of like him and Ringo, they're very, you know, warm, round, kind of wooden tone. He's got very a specific feel. You know, I watched that drumming documentary. I forget what it was called, but it was all about drummers. And one of the most interesting things is one of them was talking about, one of the session guys was talking about, like, you can't really replicate another drummer because you have your own internal rhythm and you have your own feel. So, mm-hmm. you know, you'll constantly be hunting for that if you are, but you'll probably never achieve the same because it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, you can always get close. You'll never get the same. There'll never be another Jimi Hendrix. There's never another John Bonham.
You know,
you can get close, but you cannot, you know, it's all internal, you know, and I first learned about the band through Dan many, many years ago, 20 years ago, right? Yeah. So I met him, you know, and he was in, what was that school up there?
Musicians Institute.
Yeah, MI, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Musicians Institute in LA. And, you know, trying to do the whole cover band circuit thing, you know, all sorts of different songs. And I remember, you know, a couple of them, The Weight we were trying to do, Ophelia, Caravan, yeah, Shape of Man, all those things. And so that's where I first learned about it. But yeah, diving into even more, because, you know, I played some here and there, obviously the popular ones, but like we're diving into like these records and like the tunes that, you know, aren't necessarily the big hits or whatever. So diving into that and really seeing what a great drummer he really, really, really was and how complicated some of his stuff really is. Like, just like Ringo. I mean, people think Ringo's this easy drummer. Ringo's not an easy drummer. Just like Levon. Levon is not an easy drummer.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to do what he does.
For sure.
So, yeah, you know, I do my best.
No, cool. That's
I do
cool.
My, have my you, best Levon Helm.
Have you guys ever seen the those homespun tapes that they did in the 90s? Because Levon's got a drumming one.
Just watched it last night.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. Rick's got a bass one. They're fun, you know. Obviously,
they are.
You know, it's basics, but it's interesting to see how they approach their instruments, right? And Levon is such a smooth talker. Just the way he talks about it, like how do you sing and drum at the same time? He's like, I don't think about it, and you're like, okay. You're like, I'm thinking about it.
Don't think about it. How do you do that? Like, how do you do that?
Yeah. No, that's cool. Now, just like extending it out to the rest of the group here, anybody can jump in when approaching material of the band. And, you know, you guys are taking a look at material. Like, historically, you looked at The Last Waltz, you've looked at some of the bigger hits, you know, Rock of Ages, some of the more obscure ones as well. How do you strike that balance between note for note accuracy and your own interpretation? And do you have conversations about parts? They're like, well, maybe, you know, we won't play this Robbie solo exactly the same, or maybe this kind of Rick bass line is it really needed in our version here? How do you strike that balance?
Again, I think, like, even watching the way, even if I didn't know Andrew, for instance, didn't know everything note for note for all the things coming up, whether he does or he doesn't, just seeing the approach. And when you're kind of, and when you have enough like stuff built around you and the tone shape, even just on the instrument, what you're doing, and it kind of shapes what you will, your parameters and what you will and won't do. And then the more you listen around to just the general sensibilities, I think you're more, it's a funny thing. It's kind of subtle in some ways. I don't know, since I'm doing, you know, Rick's stuff on the bass, it's like there's certain lines that stick out to me that I'm definitely going to hit because they seem really important and I love the way that they work out. But then just the general playfulness here and there and kind of getting into that in the conversation, the way he's playing around with the other players. The band was a band, like the way that they worked off of each other and threw curveballs and bounced back and all that. And since you're kind of already in a box tonally with the instruments that you're on, and the song structures are so demanding to begin with, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of room for either interpretation or doing it perfectly. It's just kind of like going to be what it is, and your head's in the right spot and your heart's there. If you listen to the song, it just seems like everyone's doing, I don't know if anyone's trying to mimic or anything. No one's really mimicking and no one's really trying to copy exactly. Mm-hmm. But the songs seem to just kind of like you summon them up and then they kind of ride out like this cool wave.
Yeah, there's certain things. Yeah, like the band as they try to do to replicate some of the exactness of like what's the one we were just doing yesterday, just with
Life is a Carnival,
with the piano hits, or no, the just those piano holds.
Servant.
No. See, we can't even think of it right now.
Well, we're also working on
A lot of songs.
It was a little thing. It was just the beginning thing. It was a small little thing. So we did that. But say for instance, like a solo or something, it doesn't need to be exact. It needs to be within the
ballpark.
The feel of the night, because again, the band I guess wouldn't play it the same night every night anyway.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the biggest thing is, you try to, which we found in trying to do the last waltz, you're capturing a concert that was, the one time they played it like that. That was the one time, Garth played that solo, so, so it's more about, getting in that mindset, what would he do having that knowledge and then applying it, having fun with it, trying to get some of those key lines, but then, just exploring where you can take it as they would if they were playing it for the 100th, 200,000th time,
Yeah, it's got a feel, right? Like when I was talking to Jimmy Weider, like when he joined the band in 85, I asked him this question in my interview with him. I was like, did Levon or Rick or any of those guys ever tell you like what to play or how to play it? Because you're filling in for, Robbie's parts. He's like, no. He's like, I listened to the songs and I was a band fan, so like I know the generalness of what that vibe is supposed to be, but he's like, exactly. I always just played my licks. And if you watch those videos, you can't really tell it's different because he fits the vibe. He understands what the role is and what the assignment is for each song. And if it's different, it's almost better in a lot of ways. And most people aren't digging deep into the arrangements like, we are, like an average listener. They kind of hear that solo and they're like, okay, thinking about it is like, oh, that's a single coil pickup sound. Like people don't even think about that, right? So it's like if you get it in that general ballpark, you're kind of hitting the note there. But Jody, for you, go ahead, Blake. You're gonna say something.
I was gonna say, it's always songs first too. It's like we do spend probably the most time trying to differentiate sometimes with harmonies because
sure
they've got that crazy group vocal thing. And it sounds like sometimes it's a Philharmonic choir, like the harmonies are super super tight, and sometimes it's this polyphony of like a barn burning down and chickens and roosters partying, and it's like this wacky looseness, but the harmonies are always really good and the tones are so unique. We probably spend the most time deciphering that so we can pay like, okay, that's Richard who's very low but then he sings super high, so we gotta be like, okay, keeping a keen
very low.
And well, I would say that.
And they're not doing triads all the time. They're not like Crosby, Nash, and Young, where it's kind of like you can kind of figure it out. When you listen to it, like you're saying, you get the high and the low, you get the kind of harmony coming in late or slightly too early. Mm. It's very specific. And I imagine that's really fucking hard to do.
That's the tricky, that's the time we'll probably spend the most look at. Like there's certain things like, I don't know if there's anybody out there interested in like, well, what about the sour note they hit at the top of this phrase when they screwed up the song? Like, we're not really trying to do that. I don't think they would have wanted to do that. And you've heard,
consider like we do some of the obvious kind of mistakes that are
there's some fun things. If it's funny, like if I think there are a bunch of characters, like we'll throw in some winks and some nods, but we're not trying to be a super copycats.
That wouldn't be fun because you could just throw on the record and listen to them if you wanted to do that, right? Jody, for you now, with Andrew here playing some more organ and some of that stuff, we were just talking about it briefly. That gives you a little bit more time to go behind the piano and do the Richard thing, which I wanted to talk to you a little bit about because I feel like, a lot of people talk about Richard the singer, obviously.
phenomenal. But Richard, the piano player, is often kind of underrated.
Right.
Just because he kind of took a little bit more of the backseat on the keys to Garth. Naturally, Garth gets to do all this crazy stuff with the organ, and then even sometimes played the piano on like Rag Mama Rag and did mm-hmm. all those crazy kind of barrel room things.
Right.
But Richard is like one of the best rhythm players I've ever heard behind the keys, the way he approached the keys, the simplicity, sure. But if you try to do it, if I try to do it, I can't kind of replicate that. How did you find that kind of switching into that gear a little bit more and kind of going into the key arrangements that Richard would play a little bit more?
Right. Well, it's actually been really cool. And, you know, when we did our original Last Waltz, you know, obviously, you know, we had talked about before, we're big fans of the band, and we kind of fell into the idea of doing the Last Waltz. So, you know, we were a four-piece band as Mrs. Henry. So it just kind of seemed like, well, you know, I have the gear, I'll do this. I'll kind of cover the gear, cover all the keys parts, you know, which was a quite a big task. And we had talked originally about, should we try to get someone else and things like that. And we were looking around and didn't really have too much luck. So in trying to do both was definitely really crazy, trying to get into the and, you know, there were times where I would play both piano and organ at the same time, but most of the time I would sort of jump back and forth between, you know, this is a huge organ song and it's got, you know, these licks, but then I'm going to jump to piano on this part. So there definitely was, you know, a little bit kind of lacking in some ways. And we've all really noticed, you know, just the incredible fullness that we now get of having both instruments. And, you know, we had kind of talked originally, you know, cause we're not necessarily, you know, a tribute band, you know, we're not, you know, dressing up like it, we're not doing, you know, everything the same way. So, you know, we're like, yeah, let's hop back and forth on the keys, you know, and things like that. And then once we brought Andrew in and just kind of seeing his mind and brain and how it works, he really kind of seems to me like the Garth of the group. It's pretty cool because we're both, you know, music directors and musicians at churches, which are literally, you know, 3 or 4 minutes apart, right down the road from each other. We've never been to competing churches. Yes, yes. So it's been so refreshing to actually kind of, you know, revisit these songs and be like, okay, now I don't have to jump back and forth. Now I can really pick up on the rhythm aspect of the piano. And you're right, a lot of stuff does get sort of overlooked. You know, there's not a lot of Richard you know, solos on the piano, but you can consider all the licks and all the lines in between, you know, the rhythmic comping to kind of be a constant solo in a way. But mm-hmm. it's been great to really just be able to settle into that and pick out parts I hadn't picked out before, where I was focusing on an organ and being like, okay, what is he doing? While Garth is, you know, kind of doing his thing, or while Robbie's doing its thing. And yeah, it's been fun to explore that. So much great stuff there. He's really holding it down, keeping that sound really full. But yeah, you hear, you know, I really start to get into what he's thinking, and I find, you know, I'll play a song with a certain way and throw in a certain lick, and then I'll listen back to it, and my lick sounded pretty close to his lick, and I'm like, okay, cool, like I kind of see where he is, because yeah. a lot of it, you know, and with working with Andrew, you know, and how to cover these parts, you can see a lot of like, well, how does it work? Is it just five people just going at it the whole time where it's just a cacophony of sound? It's like, no, there's parts where everybody's kind of weaving in, and you see a little moment, and I'm going to throw a little lick in here, but it's not going to overpower anything. And it all just seems to really work. It's so yeah. cool.
That's awesome. I'm glad you guys are doing that, because I think it's a key, right? Because this band didn't have two guitar players in the traditional like rhythm lead slot, and the piano mm-hmm. kind of is doing that a lot. Obviously Richard too, great melody writer. So you get a little bit of that in there, but mm-hmm. let's shift to the bass a little bit, Blake. I think you got that fretless going now, so talk to me a little bit about that, because obviously that in the early years especially, that's the defining part of Rick Danko's sound, that almost acoustic sounding fretless bass. How was it playing that? Had you ever played and messed around with a fretless too much electric bass like that, or is this kind of your first time diving into that world?
Oh man, I've tinkered in the past with fretless. In fact, I used to have a really cool acoustic fretless that was the most aggressive sounding thing I ever had. I really missed that bass. But and yeah, Rick's, especially when he's on the fretless, it's very rubber band and kind of like cartoony. It's really, really cool. I think he got to open up and do just a whole different take on everything. So I've been really having fun doing that. Like bass for me is always very percussive, and it's like the king of rhythm. And you're a bass player, right, Tara?
Yeah.
So like and then when you add in the fretless, it seems like it's even more percussive for some reason. I don't know why, but especially the way in some of these songs, the way he's playing them, it's been really fun. And and fortunately, thanks to Eastwood, they got us this this bass. They've been helping us out, and so
cool.
it's like a copy of an old Ampeg, the one that Rick used, and they're from Canada. Eastwood's in Canada. They make great stuff. And since we've been leaning heavy into the Rock of Ages too, and it's the 50th anniversary of all that, and you know Rick was using fretless lands. So for me, it's been pretty neat to switch gears completely, and even the way it's been amplified has been different for me. So I've been playing songs that we played on the last waltz different. You know, you go back and you're kind of relearning some things, and some approaches are different, and the feel's just a little different. And so it's cool because you could get to revisit it, and then with new glasses, kind of like look at the song and approach it differently. So
it's how are you amplifying it this time?
I still haven't really landed on anything solid, but it's been very much pretty direct, actually.
Yeah,
I've been, and which is something I typically completely despise. Direct line bass, it's just it never makes sense. But for some reason, I think the way that this pickup is and the way it is, it doesn't have any overwhelming super low frequency unusable 50 hertz nonsense. It's like, if you can imagine the dude from Korn playing in the band, so this thing just feels really,
that's an wouldn't image that be, for sure
wouldn't that yeah
so, yeah yeah,
yeah.
He has a name, it's Fieldy.
I beg your pardon. Fieldy, get in here. He's outside. yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with it. It's been really, really cool. It's been feeling really good, and it kind of shapes your headspace too, as I imagine any of the other, like Andrew's palette, what he's working with the Lowry little brother, kind of like shapes the way you're going to approach things. And
sure. The instrument mess around gives with
fretless. You ever?
No,
you ever,
I'm not that good. I'm pretty fucking shitty, actually. but no, I haven't messed around.
This might be the bass for you though, because if you don't like the note you're on, you can slide right.
Yeah, you're always a few. You're just a few twitch away from being the right note.
Right note. Yeah.
Bend it, you can bend five steps and you know.
Exactly.
But yeah, it is pretty demanding as far as the precision of it. It's pretty unforgiving too. So getting used to like the intonation, and there's no lines on the neck. It's clean, but they've got the dot markers on the top of the neck,
sure,
which were extra confusing. Like I could have used the 5, 7, 9, and 12, but it's got every fret. It's just a line of dots, which doesn't really help you.
No.
It just looks confusing. Right. But it's been fine. We've been going well with it.
Do you string that up just for my listeners might not care about this, but I do. On that, how do you string that? Is that flat wounds or what does that look like?
Currently flat wounds, but I'm a little nervous, and somebody listening who plays bass more professional than me or knows how to take care of gear better is gonna scoff, but it's round wounds on this fretless board, and so I'm worried about the neck getting some gnarly wear and tear.
Sure.
But that's rock and roll, man. Pete Townsend used to break them, and I'm gonna just put little lines in them all the way down. But I might go to the round wound or the flat wounds. But I really like round wounds. I like the aggressive, you know.
Are you playing with the pick like Rick used to do, or you play with a finger?
Yeah, which is weird too, because for some reason, whenever I'm playing the band, I always play with a pick. Like Matt Freeman from Rancid is one of my favorite dudes. He's passed the torch from Entwistle and all the really aggressive bass players, and I always play with the pick. But for some reason, whenever I was playing the band stuff, I would use my fingers, and which is funny because Rick always played with a pick.
Yeah.
And so I'm definitely sticking with the pick for the fretless too. It seems almost sacrilegious for some bass players, I think. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at it, I was deep diving in that he would use his fingers for period he's using it, and then sometimes so, not, and he broke his wrist or something like that.
I'm in the same boat. Awesome. Yeah. Maybe that's why I use his fingers, because I was actually opting for the first few. I hurt my wrist and I was using fingers more. Plus the way that bass, if anybody knows what it is, look it up. What's the Ampeg AU1? Is that what it is? AUB. AUB1. The one, and yeah. For the Eastwood, it's EUB2. I think it's the fretless version. And it's got F holes that are cut right through the body so you can see through it. So it's actually really easy to hold and play with your thumb.
Cool.
But yeah, I switch back and forth just depending on how delicate the song is. If it's really, you know, quiet and delicate, I'll use my fingers from time to time. But I always love seeing how he plays. Watching him play the bass is an enigma. It's so fun and funny looking and so rad because his rhythm is impeccable. It's like drunken boxing, but on the bass. Uh-huh. It's like every hit's landing, and when you walk out of the fight with him, like, you're bleeding. Like, what? But he never even hit me. He was just kind of flopping around and getting weird. Whenever I watch Rick play, I'm like, man, that guy's having the most fun.
The feel's insane. The feel is
is
insane. And in the melody too, because he originally was a guitar player, and then he played that six string Fender bass thing for a while as well.
I have one
with Ronnie Hawkins. Yeah, so he's got a unique feel that, like, it's very hard to get close, I find, a lot of times. But you're nailing it.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
That's a huge compliment.
Is it a short scale, by the way, or is it full?
No,
it's full.
No, I think it's. I could be just scared of the thing, but it feels like it's longer.
Yeah.
It feels
like three frets are like that.
Yeah, with the fret markers, I'm like, but it feels like the three is where the five usually is, and those markers don't help at all. It's getting a little weird on some of those songs in the early part, and then I cheated. I put scotch tape, just little lines on the neck, so like not on the fretboard, but on the neck, so kind of like, okay. That's training wheels for bass players.
That's right.
I come to you clean, come as I am.
Yeah, I couldn't live without the dots. I can barely play with the dots on the neck. So, I'm going to stay away from the fretless for now.
When we meet up, when we play, I'll throw it at you. You can funk around with it. It's pretty fun. Like,
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, no, that's cool. Let's move on. Daniel, with the guitar. Your tone's impeccable with it. You know, you're getting a lot of that feel that Robbie has. But how do you do that too? Because there's kind of, I would say there's two eras of Robbie's kind of playing in the band. There's early with the telly. It's a little cleaner, I guess. And then later on, he switches to the Strat, and it's definitely a little bit more metallic. A little bit harder. He solos more. He attacks a little bit more. It actually reminds me more of his early playing when he was doing blue stuff with like John Hammond and things like that. How do you approach that?
Hold on.
We got a guess.
Hey, Gizmo. Just keep going. It's cool. Sorry, our good friend Gizmo, who will be joining us on our tour. Gizmo's our amigo, the newest of the tribe.
Cool.
So, I kind of approach from the same aspect as, like, well, by album, by the time period, trying to, you know, not to say, you know, I don't know, I guess replica, or you're playing a replica bass of the one that Danko was playing. I'm trying to dial in and get the sound, because I think a part of what makes that cohesion and that, you know, crazy soup that they, you know, all drink together in like a time period like Rock of Ages, or those sounds or those records, is their spirit, their headspace. You know, I know this has been nailed. You can get in their head, but you'll never, you know, have their brain. So you're kind of like, doing your thing with it. And so, you know, to me, that telly is so distinct, the Telecaster sound. And so I specifically went out and got this style of telly based on the same style of telly that I had, which is it's a reissue, it's like a 2009 reissue, and it's the first reissue, this road worn series of a telly that's like, it's like a 50s neck. I only know so much on the pickup world. I only nerd out that hard on guitars and stuff like that, but I know it's the neck was very specific and I loved it. And I bought this guitar. I bought a red version of this in Richmond, Virginia on tour in February 2020. And then that guitar got stolen while we were from the studio we were recording at in the middle of the pandemic. And I went through several other tellies since then, and none of them felt the same. None of them sounded the same. They all sounded good or had their own thing, but I bought that telly originally, the one in Richmond, Virginia, because I was like, that's the sound. That's the sound of the telly that I've been looking for, to have the right feel and the right thing and just the right approach to playing the guitar in that style. And so I found one on Reverb and I was just like, you know what? I know this is what I want. I know this is the kind. And, you know, was able to get a gentleman out by the name of Douglas out in Florida, shipped it out for me. And I've been happy as a clam ever since playing it. And just, you know, I do have a Strat. I have a, you know, a strap. It's not a Strat. It's not dipped in bronze, like, you know, like, like Robbie's.
Not yet.
But, you know, and I try and, you know, look at those components and see, you know, hey, like, you know, even I was searching, kind of nerding out on the amp world and trying to see, okay, what was he doing? Robbie was playing a Fender Tweed Twin, which twins are, you know, any new twins and twins like now are pretty much just this obnoxiously loud, clean, like bark, like, bah! And
yeah,
that's all. But like our OG twins were amazing and sound amazing. They also cost like, you know, $10,000.
Yeah.
It's not in the cards this time yet.
Yeah.
But so, and then also his twin, you know, I was researching, he had a twin with a blown out speaker in it. And he's like, I guess from what I've read, he liked how it sounded, so he didn't change it. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. So, you know, on my approach, I just was looking at like, well, how can I do this? So I was, you know, kind of going through my amps of what I have. And I'm like, well, you know what? You know, like on the last tour we done, you know, I have my pedal board with Henry, which, you know, in making the last record we did, I experimented with a lot of things, fuzzes for the first time, you know, use my phaser on it, octopedal, all this. And I have a board with that now. And I was like, I don't need any of this to do what Robbie is doing or to play this music.
Sure.
So ditch that. Now just plugging straight into a Gibson Falcon.
I dig that out.
I think it is, or it's Gibson it's some kind of Gibson. It's a beautiful Gibson amp and it's a little guy, and I have it just dimed, and as long as I can get it a little bit in the monitors, you know, I'm just doing straight into the amp and just use, you know, when I want to take a solo, turn the volume up all the way, when I want to play rhythm, just, you know, put it to where it sits in the pocket with the band. And you know, I'm starting to just appreciate that, you know, aspect. It's kind of really getting back to the, you know, quote unquote roots of playing guitar and music, of, you know, just play to the group, play to the band, play to the night.
Yeah. So. No, that's easier cool.
Set up too.
Yeah. Much easier to set up.
Yeah. That's a balance too. Like when you start diving into this old gear, like, if you start looking at in the amp world, trying to find an amp that's affordable that has Celestion El Nico speakers in it and stuff like that, it's like so hard to find. It's so hard to transport, not break. So you kind of have to pick your battles, right? Because new gear is so much lighter. It's like, can you kind of get the sound that you want and without compromising too much?
It's so disgustingly light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous how light some amps are now. Like, oh my God.
Well, I mean, I was looking
at the bass world. In the bass world,
they weigh less than the guitar amps by far. A pedal board weighs way more than the amps I've used.
Yeah, it's the lack of tubes now. Like I got a Fender Rumble 500. It's 36 pounds.
That thing is ridiculous. It's so loud and it weighs nothing. You could kick it like a soccer ball.
Yeah,
and exactly. I wanted to get a bunch of those and make a tower out of them and just
yeah.
I love the concept. Sick. Yeah, I always wanted. I love that that's possible. I don't know how it works. It was neodymium speakers, and then there are no tubes. It's all transistors and then acoustic technology. But I'm so impressed with those rumbles, man. It's ridiculous.
The rumble is solid, and it beats hauling around like an 80s PV tube amp that's like 400 pounds. So
bruises yeah. you whenever you take it, and then you're trying to get it out and hit you in the leg.
How counterintuitive. Also, really delicate. I mean, like it weighs 1,000,000 pounds, and oh, we bumped it, and the tubes are out. Spend more money on tubes.
The horror story of it. Your tubes breaking just before or in the gig, and you're like, oh fuck. Like our guitar player, he travels with a spare set of tubes because they break. So,
but then like you gotta, that, but the headache of that too, like you gotta worry, like, oh, well, it's gonna, they're gonna go out. Like that's the way tubes work. And I don't know. I mean, we do this. We bring out all our real wild gear, and I have two acoustic 360s in case one goes out, always ready to rock. And they never go out. Like the original advertisement for the 360s, they threw it from a two-story window, smashed it all on the ground in pieces, and they plugged it in and fired it up. But still, like, it goes out all the time, and I have to fix it or worry about it. Good. Yeah.
We're not to say limiting our risks. We're putting our risks just on different things, like taking out, you know, like a 70-year-old organ, two of them, you know, and two Leslie's, you know, 70 years old. Like, we'll just... You know, but we'll keep, you know, hey.
Yeah.
Keep it where we can get it.
But the kids, you guys are also playing with horns too again, right? How's that going? Because that's also, you know, obviously part of the band live sound, at least with Rock of Ages and The Last Waltz, so a lot of horns, but that's another element that logistically I'm assuming it's just difficult to deal with when touring.
Yeah, well, we're doing a different approach, and we'll have to we'll let you know how it goes. And as we've decided to take a different route, maybe the Chuck Berry approach of playing with a different section in each city. Okay. And seems like you know, like I said, we're managing our risks of what could go wrong here. But you know, we are keeping one thing very consistent, and that's our horn arranger, Jesse Adello, who I know I've mentioned this before, beautiful, makes a genius arranger and sax player, and you know, plays with a phenomenal group, Surefire Soul Ensemble. They're on Coal Mine Records, and his own group, Fresh Veggies Micro Brass, which is this kind of crazy group. And you know, we did the first tour out of the gate early in the beginning of this year, or midway through this year. We went with the whole section, and it was a ton of fun. You know, if we were in a place right now where, you know, I mean, I'd say if we had a bus, but actually Alan just bought a bus, so I didn't really see that coming. But you know, we are going to have a bus, so technically we could have housed all these people. But it seemed logistically like a very difficult thing to add another four people plus our crew. We already have like our main man Gizmo here, who's going to be joining us for the U.S. leg of the tour, and you know, a sound dedicated, you know, driver, roadie. Like, we're having people to help us ease the load of making our job on the stage just the most efficient it could be. It just seemed like, let's go this route and give it a go, because why not? Because we're young.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the second time, if this is super successful, the ideal would be to have those cats come along.
Sure.
Assuming they can. The availability is with everybody and everything.
Yeah.
Even, I mean, straight logistic was Jesse's like, they can't do the tour. We're like, okay. Just
physically can't be there.
There you go.
Like, well, let's work with that.
Well, what can we do? We That's can right. get players in each town.
Can they
cool.
Skype in? You know, what's the latency like?
And, That's right. And so far, it's been, like I said, of just like, well, cool. Well, Jesse's going to communicate with all these people. He's going to relay the charts. Once again, too, Jesse, and, you know, I guess we'll kind of speak on his behalf because he's not here, but Jesse's, you know, kind of got the direction of like, hey, you know, a lot of our charts and arrangements were based off of more The Last Waltz. And this time around, we're like, yeah, okay, cool. Like, Night They Drove Old Dixie Down. We really want to hone in on this arrangement, which it's a different intro than The Last Waltz, and different little articulations that just, you know, I mean, you know, they peel the paint off the wall a little different on that one. It's like a different, completely different feel. So there's a lot more of this room for the horns and you know, the arrangements of the horns on Rock of Ages are definitely different than what they are on The Last Waltz. And we're definitely taking that detail, and you know, so it will be interesting. What's really great about some of these markets is we'll be able to have you know, the horns from Columbus will also, fortunately, we just found out today, will be the horns in Cleveland.
Nice.
You know, so, you know, finding some people, you know, I mean, that's one down. We're working on the horns in each city, and we have all the, you know, different players, and we're going to meet those players the day of, and we're going to play, and they're going to know the charts and the music, and all of them are so enthused to get to play this music. I mean, yeah, that's what's really great too, is getting an opportunity. Wow, we're right off the bat, we're gonna get to meet, you know, three to four fans of the band right on stage with us,
because guaranteed at least four fans on this tour.
At least four fans joining us that we're paying to be there. They're gonna be there. But so it should be interesting. You know, we you know, it's, and a lot of these guys are really stoked too. Like, yeah, when you guys come back in, we're going to be stoked, you know, a little bit of that, like, this is what I'm looking for, consistency to potentially, well, if we come back in and we're doing a, you know, tour of this or tour of that, you know, we'll have these dudes to work with. And so, you know, in New York, there's a section that we're really excited, you know, kind of a, you know, our show in New York, it's Monday, August 15th, and it's the exact 50th anniversary release of Rock of Ages. Rock of Ages came out 1972 on August 15th. I don't know what day it was in the week. So we have an amazing section that's members of Antibalas, Budo's band, TV on the Radio. These guys have played with everybody. David Bowie, you know, St. Vincent, David Burns, Joe Russo. You know, cool. Joe Russo's done legendary performances of The Last Waltz, you know.
Yeah.
So these dudes are, you know, kind of proverbial, as good as you get. I can't wait. You know, Eric Biondo is the trumpet player, and he's the one that's kind of spearheading the Brooklyn endeavors. And, you know, it wasn't in the cards that he was like, dude, I would love to do this tour. He's like, let me see if these guys can do it. He's like, I have family in Buffalo. We can do this to Buffalo. This would be amazing. He's like, my whole family would be just amazed to see this music. And the sousaphone players, John Atiri, I might be butchering his last name, but, you know, Eric's like, dude, this dude's played the Last Waltz concert before, might have even been with Joe Russo. And he's like, you know, all these dudes love it. This dude, Dave Smuta Smith, he plays with, once again, trombone player, plays with everybody under the sun, Run the Jewels, just cool. a lot of these cats. And then Stuart Bogie, or it might be Bogie, Stuart Bogie, Bogie. If you're out there listening to this, once again, when I meet you, I'll probably still butcher your name, but I'll do my best to not. But he plays with Joe Russo. You know, his band is featuring him. And, you know, I know I keep saying that name, because every single time I see Joe Russo, he's like one of the greatest drummers of all time. He blows my mind. He's amazing. I saw him at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester. And I sent Jody a photo of his keyboard, his situation, because the keyboard player in his band, it was Joe Russo's Almost Dead. He's playing a 9-foot grand piano. And I was like, Jody, squad goals.
Yeah, I saw Joe at Bethel Woods for Mountain Jam 2018. It was a cool experience. The horn thing, though, that's cool. I think, just between us and everybody listening, I think Iconoclast should put the bill. Iconoclast, they should put the bill. Get you guys a permanent horn section. Give you a little dough to take the horns on the road with you. But they're not officially, but unofficially.
Yeah.
To the top, if you're up.
That's cool, though. Let's talk a little bit about the tour, though. The tour is, you guys are going out. Fingers crossed. You hit every single date here. You're starting July 20th in Costa Mesa, California, and then you're going all the way through until August 15th in Brooklyn. Talk to me about what you're excited for. Are you excited for certain cities? Like, because you guys are going all over the place.
I'm excited for the whole thing. Yeah, I mean, just going across the country, and I mean, after everything was, the world was shut down, you know, it's finally good to get out into the world again. But I mean, to me, I'm from Columbus, so that'll be a good show for me. I got a lot of friends and family out there. I'm one show in particular I'm pretty excited about. My all of them, but there's this venue in Pittsburgh that that is really cool, and it's a really cool night. Like the venue, they do this thing. It's the Thunderbird Music Hall, and they do these shows where it's like the Beatles versus Dylan. So you have like a band that comes and they play the Beatles song, and then, you know, another band comes and plays Dylan. And so that's what the theme of that night is. It's Allman Brothers versus the band. So there's okay. An Allman Brothers.
You guys got to show up and you got to beat them, because we all
yeah,
know.
Yeah, oh, well, of
come
course.
On.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
We'll beat them by numbers.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, yeah, just the whole tour in general.
Else, I've never done a tour before, so this is my first time.
Nice.
Let's see how it goes.
See how tour
I'm
like
excited.
Is with these
I'm
guys.
Excited.
He's gonna hate us by the end of it.
I'm excited.
He's gonna hate us all.
I'm pretty stoked. Well, this is our first time we're gonna be touring with a bus, and we have Alan just got a bus, which is also making it all possible for everybody involved, and it's diesel, which is also awesome, and I think, yeah, what Alan said too, just getting to hit the road, there's nothing like it. And then all the people, there's people I haven't seen in New York for years that are just like, dude, yes, awesome, we'll be there, we can't wait, and getting to reconnect with friends. And even we're making, you know, the we're picking up a CP80 Yamaha piano, which is a baby grand 88 key piano from a gentleman out in Florence, Kentucky, that, you know, he stoked. It's so funny how from just this, I mean, this guy out in Florence, Kentucky, who's got a studio, ended up getting on an hour call with him, and he used to work at the Bearsville studio there that nice. Albert Grossman, yep. I guess, you know, kind of funded and
yep.
part of the whole Woodstock community. And it's just amazing the small world exist, and tell me, oh yeah, the Scorpions would go, they'd lock down for a year there, and then go, or Foreigner, I think it was Foreigner you're saying, go and then go do some shows out here, come back and just play, be at the studio, and had amazing Neve console, and you know, getting to see some of these spots. I'm particularly stoked we're gonna actually, we you know, we managed to wrangle a night, the one small night, the literally the one window in August that when I was first looking at this tour 2 months ago, because we really all came together literally in about a month, but there was a window to stay at Big Pink.
Nice.
And so we're gonna go stay at Big Pink, and I'll go
it's
get
magical
there.
Yeah
so I can't wait, and I've had a chance to go visit Big Pink before in Woodstock, and we've got a friend in Kingston as well that we'll hopefully link up with, and yeah, just get to see people, friends, meet new, make new friends, go get to see you.
Yeah, yep. Coming across the border, bring
coming
it
across the border, Toronto. Yeah,
yeah, yep. Bring it to the homeland where it all started. I'll have to show you guys some spots. There's some cool murals of the guys and the Hawks on Yonge Street, because that's where it all kind of started for those guys. And there's some stuff around. But yeah, I'm stoked to have you guys. And you know, I've already gotten some people DMing me because I've been sharing what you guys are doing, and people are stoked for it. I have one buddy that asks, and you probably don't know yet, but is there a chance that you guys are going to do more dates after the August 15th? Because we got some love for you guys up in the Northeast, and they're curious if there's going to be any more dates potentially. It's challenging, I know.
It is. We won't believe me. We've, I mean, this is what's been kind of amazing of ever since we started Chest Fever, which, you know, literally, I think I'd have to check the date, but less than 2 months ago, we've had people reach out to us on the website and mm-hmm. through social media asking us to play everywhere. And we want to play everywhere. And we just don't have, we wish we had the time and the ability, and literally the time in our schedule, to be able to do it. And we're gonna absolutely in 2023. We're looking at the next run, and we're just like, if it was feasible within time of everything we were doing, yes, we're gonna go everywhere we can. We will. And what's the thing too is that we're doing this show, and we're planning on next year to move on to another show. So this, we wish we could break, you know, tour this show, this, you know, Rock of Ages, playing the songs of the fashion all across the world. But it's gonna be this summer, and that's what's, you know, part of the, you know, the beauty of music is, hey, this is gonna be the one shot to see it. So if you ever thought about, if you got one shot, if you thought about taking a vacation to Toronto on a Wednesday, this is the day to do it. Canada, come on, you gotta come out. And same thing with if it could have worked in any way, I mean, believe me, we worked around the clock to make this happen, let alone if there was a way we could work around the clock to make the other dates, we would. But, you know, we also have our own music we're very excited to play. We just found out today, you know, a slew of festivals to play in Mexico with Mrs. Henry that we can't wait. And then, you know, a huge big project that's just right around the bend, you know, when we get back, you know, is The Last Waltz, you know. So we're definitely going to keep playing this music, and we're definitely then in 2023, we have a very big endeavor we're going to partake in that I think we hope will give all the fans that are reaching out to us the added opportunity to see this music and to experience it. You know, it won't be Rock of Ages, but it will be a very special show, and hopefully many shows coming up in 2023. So I'm trying to, if we could find, you know, potentially even the time to do where there's a will, there's a way. And it's definitely, you definitely never say never. And there might, you know, I don't know, there might be another reasoning and an opportunity for us to do this concert sooner than later again.
Cool. All right, let's do a rapid fire here. So we're talking Rock of Ages. A lot of people think this is the defining band live album. I would agree personally. I like it better than The Last Waltz myself. You have to pick. You can go around each of you answer. Favorite song from Rock of Ages, rendition of a song that they did on Rock of Ages. Go ahead, Daniel. You start.
The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down.
Cool.
This is the most challenging. It's this song, I don't know why, is just spiritually or not, is like the most challenging, simplest song, but the most challenging song for me as a singer to just do justice, and every single time I'm gonna be working on it to go. And but when we nail, when the magic's there and the molasses is as thick as can be, it's spiritual.
Cool. Alan?
Same. Like that one gives me goosebumps.
You can't do that.
That one gives me goosebumps every time. Every time. And it's like it has this drag to it. It's nice and slow. And, you know, love it. If I'm going with the fast song, I like Don't Do It. But, you know, The Night They Drove Dixie Down, that's always one of my favorites anyway.
Cool. Andrew?
Actually, I told you, Dan, I told you that The Wait, I love the version of The Wait from the Rock of Ages, because that piano part just sounds so good. Ooh. Just those the low keys. Notes. Yeah. The low notes starting out. Yeah, but then also like the highs. Like I'm like, this is like the best version of The Wait that I've heard from all. Like, I just
agree.
Love it.
I agree. It's a fantastic rendition. Jody.
Man, so many good songs, so many different versions. You know, there's a lot of songs that are in The Last Waltz, of course, that we didn't tackle in our previous playing of their music. I'm really looking forward to Unfaithful Servant. And we've been really diving into that song. That to me is probably the most challenging of chord changes, I would almost say. Just the way it's arranged and everything, it does sort of follow a pattern, but there's just something really cool about it. You know, I mean, all the songs have great lyrics and great stories, but there's something just really fun about that one, and like just really dialing in, you know, the kind of the calmness of that song, and just kind of really leaning into that. I think that's going to be a favorite of mine for sure.
Yeah, That's one of the most jazzy based pieces of the band does, with that kind of descending chord progression.
It's unique.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Definitely.
Blake, for you, what about you? There's some great bass lines on here, or maybe it's something else. What are you looking forward to?
And it's really cool, and there's lots of cool transitions too, and the feel of everything. It's also kind of cool because I think they were charging really hard on the last waltz, especially for a couple of feels and for songs. On Rock of Ages, they really tuck and kind of give themselves some space in a lot of spots. So that's really just that general idea on so many of the approaches that kind of blankets a lot of the songs. I kind of like, we've been doing that, and it's been really cool, especially now that we have a whole other member and there's other parts coming in and you have the extra room. And so that sensibility in general has been a really cool thing that I think is directly kind of comes from the Rock of Ages. I can't wait to Cross Great Divide. Is going to be really, really damn great.
Yeah. That's also, we were rated song.
Sorry. I can swear on this thing. It's such a great song. It's such a great song. And the way it comes out of The Night That Drove Elixir Down is really cool.
I like that. Those two things together. Yeah. Like, that's really,
thematically,
really
cool. It works.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Richard's in there, and he's kind of like pre-funk George Clinton. He's like, when he's singing those opening lines, and it's kind of like way behind the one when he's singing, and it's just really cool, sticky feel. Also, we were jamming Get Up Jake the other day, and that song is really fun to play.
That's maybe the most fun song of the night. It's just,
we hadn't played that before.
We have played. It's like, it's like, just fun, and that's one that immediately we all kind of, when it comes to working on the harmonies, that's one just we all symbiotic foop went, and it was painless.
It was effortless. Like, there we go. Putting on a real funky jacket. It's like,
Get Up Jake is, to me, because that was an outtake on the Brown album. That should have been on the Brown album in the spot of Lookout Cleveland. And then it would literally be the perfect album. Wow. Because Lookout Cleveland, good song, but Get Up Jake is a fucking sleeper hit. Like, that is an amazing tune. And
I've got a lot of love for Lookout Cleveland, though. It'd be hard to replace.
Oh, no, Blake.
I'm just saying, I love that song, man. What a weird vibe.
Come on, Get Up Jake, though. The harmony, like you were saying.
That's a hook. That's a catchy. I could see that being more of a hit than Lookout Cleveland. Like, you don't see a lot of people would be singing. Although that would be a rad world if Lookout Cleveland would be there.
Get both.
I guess you couldn't do both. That would have been a tough call to make. That would have been a pretty lame thing to.
You know, if we do a Brown album tour, we'll just have to play both. We'll just be like, we're playing the outtakes too. And you know what? We'll play all the Woodstock concert as well, because it's all on the extended version. Why not?
That's right. Speaking of that, I talked to Bob Clearmount, who did the remix, and there's so little info out there about, like, it's just like, well, Bob Clearmount did the mix. So I was talking to him, and I asked him about the Woodstock stuff. And he's like, oh, I didn't do that. I was like, oh, fuck. I look like it. He was really nice about it. I don't know. We don't know.
Is there multi-track? I mean, I love that. That concert's very cool.
Yeah, and it's been cleaned up because the bootlegs are rough, and whoever cleaned it up did a good job, but it wasn't Bob. So I look like a bit of an idiot there, but he was really nice about it. But
thanks for falling on the sword. We won't say that to
him. Cool. So just in wrapping, I think I want to point people, and in all the links I'll include, the YouTube channel is really cool because you guys have put up some performances there, Tears of Rage, The Shape I'm In. I got some comments on this. I was like, there are people like, I was hesitant, but I checked out these videos and they're pretty legit. And they're like, awesome. You know, a lot of guys do band covers, but a lot of them are boomers. Rock and roll is a young man's game. So these guys are doing it well. So we're getting a lot of hype out there. But where else online can people find out more about the tour, about what you guys are up to, and just kind of keep up to date with what's going on with Chest Fever?
Yeah, I mean, well, we have a website, chestfeverofficial.com. Yeah, it's official. Chestfeverofficial.com.
We have an Instagram,
Instagram, Chest Fever Official, is, you know, probably our Instagram is the most that we just kind of tend to the most, but I think we're going to start a Twitter. I think I convinced our man, Gizmo, he's gave me the thumbs up horns that we're going to be live on Twitter too. So I don't exactly understand Twitter.
Get ready. It's a world.
Really? We're ready. Take off. But you know, it's funny. Every avenue we can think of to try and engage people who would love this music and will respond and can be connected, because like the whole purpose of this project is to connect and to meet and have it just be like, hey, cool. This flag right here. This is cool. This is the forum for this appreciation, this music. And like, you know, it's like the safe haven for that. So it's really, you know, just another thing and welcome. And I feel like, yeah, you guys all, I've been seeing it because I've been doing a lot of the social media, and but just, it's awesome to get so much response and love and just hear people stoked about it. And that's what's awesome about the band community. You know, it's about loving and continuing that story.
Yeah. No, when you guys join the Twitter, we'll pump it out to the few thousand on there and get you guys some followers. But TikTok, think about TikTok, boys. That's where it's at.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I was kind of,
we got to get Andrew. We got to get Andrew there with a fake beard doing his best Garth. That'll go viral. You know?
Oh,
we thought about doing some vignettes about different lyrics of songs. That might be the place to house it.
TikTok might be the place to do the vignettes.
Jack the dog. What was the other one you guys came up with?
Oh, we were going to do, Get Up Blake. Well, we had a great vignette that Andrew's posing of Chad coming in and Blake sleeping and throwing water on Blake and being like, get up. Well, how do you explain it better?
Dan's on his way. Yeah. Gotta get down to the docks in like 20 minutes, man. Like Dirty Dan's on his way from Savannah, dude. Get up. Get up, Jake, right now.
Hey, this is hit material, guys. Don't be giving it out, because there's somebody listening.
They can have it.
Tarantino's 10th film will turn out to be.
Oh, yeah. This is what he does. He prowls podcasts to find his new scripts.
That's right.
You're welcome, Quentin.
All right, guys, thanks again, and I'll include everything in the bio, and obviously we'll be helping promote that as that
thank
as
you
it
for
happens.
Your help.
Thank you.
But it's a pleasure having you guys on for a combo again.
Yeah.
Thanks for the head and the heart, man. Man.
Yeah, thank you so much. We are really looking forward to meeting you in person, man.
Yeah, man. Cool. That was my interview with Chest Fever. I hope everybody enjoyed it. Like I was saying in the episode, there's some great YouTube videos. For any skeptics out there, believe me, I'm a skeptic at heart. These guys are doing it right. They've got the official stamp of approval. They're a great, great band. And check out the tour dates on the website, chestfeverofficial.com. Might be coming to a neighborhood near you. I'll actually be opening for them when they come up to Toronto. So if you're interested in the Toronto date, check that out as well. If you want to follow the podcast online, we're on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram at The Band Podcast. And if you're interested in supporting the show monetarily, go to patreon.com/thebandofhistory. There's various different levels of support. You get extra bonus materials, early access to the episodes, amongst many other cool perks. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we will catch you on the next one.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.